Monday, March 21st. Today's rundown is brought to you by SeatGeek, the smartest and easiest way to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek pulls tickets from all the available resellers, so it's the easiest and fastest way to get the best price on your tickets. And right now, Stoolies can receive $20 back after their first purchase when you enter the code RUNDOWN. You got to go to the Settings tab and click Add a Promo Code. Type in RUNDOWN. After you buy your first tickets, they'll just send you $20 back. So there's really no reason not to use this. If you're ever going to buy tickets to any event, whether it's a sporting event, a concert, anything in between, you might as well get $20 back in return. So use the SeatGeek app. It's free. Add the promo code, type in RUNDOWN, and get $20 back today. It's your boy KFC hosting the rundown today. Feitelberg graciously bowed out and said to bring in our college basketball expert and all-around great guy, K. Marco. So we got him here today for obviously what is a big rundown for college hoops and a few other things to get into. So we obviously begin with basketball. Literally the craziest first weekend ever. I know we always say that, but Keith, you said it best. It statistically is actually the craziest weekend between the upsets and the buzzer beaters and everything else. So we'll begin with you. We got the UNI buzzer beater and then their meltdown. We got the Wisconsin fadeaway three last night. We got all the upsets, Sean Miller shirt, everything in between. Keith, what do we got?
Yeah, no, you're right. Like every year I do that blog, this was the craziest weekend of March Madness. But this time it like statistically was. I don't remember the exact numbers. And I did that even before last night happened, which was crazy in itself. Like that Texas A&M game, I switched over to watch Wisconsin, saw the little blurb up top saying that it was about to be an overtime and switched back. It's like every game, the only game I can think of that was over early was the Villanova one. Pretty much every other game came down to the buzzer. Which one?
No, that's it. Villanova. Put my V's up.
Yeah.
Nova Nation, baby.
Yeah, we bashed them last year, rightfully so. But this year, I mean, they look awesome. You guys want to talk about like how busted your brackets are? I know people like to hear about your brackets. Michigan State wasn't the best choice for me. I will admit to that. I can't even say my other bracket was better because I had them in that too. So this wasn't a good year for me.
That was the right choice. Michigan State can win the title when they're like an 8 seed. Now they were actually like finally good. A 2 should have been a 1. I feel like that was a great pick. Obviously not, though. And the craziest thing about that, I don't think they ever even led, right? I think it was the middle seed.
Somebody told me they were up 2-0.
Right. Yeah. They just won basically wire to wire, which is unbelievable.
When I switched over, it was 15-2. So
the real crazy thing is if Michigan State somehow survives that game, they probably do win the national. You know what I mean? They probably go to the Final Four at least. That was the worst Izzo coach game I've ever seen. That like it wasn't one of those, yes, Middle Tennessee hit all their shots, but they also were getting to the rim easily. And Michigan State was just playing soft. I've never seen them play so soft. The fact that like Sean Miller, you just mentioned that, and I forgot that happened. That feels like it was 10 years ago. My brain is so fried.
That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Yeah. The fact that it's getting swept under the rug by everything else is nuts. That was disgusting. How do you not rock like a black shirt or a sweater or something, dude? You cannot look like that.
How do you get that hot? Like it's an arena. I've been to a million basketball. We've all been to a million basketball games. It's not that hot. And I know obviously it's a little bit more like you're under the microscope. You're moving around a little bit because you're the coach. But that was standing in a sauna hot.
And you know, listen, I'm a sweaty dude. We get pit stains, whatever. You get a little sweat on the back. When your like shoulders are soaked, it looked like he jumped in a pool. That is not normal, man. Not normal.
I will say, Dan, your boy Ravel, I think he's on to something with the not doing a bracket. Like, as soon as Michigan State was out and I could just enjoy the games and not worry about it, that was kind of cool. So
he's all about the madness. That's all. Yeah. Ravel just wants madness, and no one had a better weekend than Ravel because there was nothing but nonstop madness.
I went through a small, like maybe a 1 hour, one half phase where I thought there was too many upsets, where it was like every time you turn on the TV, there was an upset, and I was like, this is kind of getting lame. And then last night, it kind of went back the other direction where I was like, give me all the madness. But there was a point where it was like, you know, if an 11 seed wins, it was just like, whatever, that's kind of expected. So,
well, you know, it happens every year. The NBA, like, hardos come out of the woodwork, and they say, well, what's the point of upsets if everyone sucks? Like, it's not parity if everyone sucks, right? And, like, all these teams, you know, the three-point line's closer and no one's playing real basketball. Fuck off. Like, this, if you don't just love – I like it. I think NBA is better than NCAA all the time. But the March Madness tournament is – there's nothing truly like it. And those 4 days – are like, that's the most American thing that America has, is just sitting, boozing, eating buffalo wings, and watching basketball until your eyes bleed.
How about the NBA throwing out the Warriors Spurs right in the middle of everything, which clearly
is a good game.
Intentional move to try to grab those NBA hardos. It was weird. I flipped over to that for that for a little bit instead of watching college basketball. I think the first time I've ever done that.
Yeah.
Best buzzer beater. I think we all have to say you and I probably, right? Wisco one though, Dan, was
Wisco step back, especially knowing how bad of a shooting team that Wisconsin is. Like that was, and he knew he hit it the second he released it. So
that's why I hated that timeout though, because I was like, who on Wisco is really going to get a solid shot here with 2 seconds left? And that kid drained it in my fucking mouth.
Thank God Nigel Hayes didn't shoot that shot, because Nigel would have like stepped back and like help. He'd still be holding his hand up, and it wouldn't even hit the rim.
Dan, what you tweeted was so true. When Wisconsin is down by like 4 points,
yeah,
I think they were down 4 coming to the end, and I thought I could just switch that game off because.
Yeah.
Pretty much over.
I thought when they got down, I think they were down 9 with about 4.5 minutes left, and I was like, they basically, Xavier can't score again. If Wisconsin wants a chance to win this game, like they have to get a stop every single time. That's and that Friday game against Pittsburgh, that was one of those situations that was so bad it was good. Like it was so laughably bad. 16 points in the first half, and it was crazy because it was 16 points in the first half, and I was like, Wisconsin's winning this game. Like they're better. Even though that was maybe the worst basketball I've ever watched in my life. They were 1-for-10 at one point. I don't even know how you do that.
Disgusting game. That was vile. Any last words for
best buzzer beater was North Iowa. I still like – people forget about it because it was the first day, I think. But the Higgins headband, that shot, just the shot and, like, the atmosphere, that was crazy. That was my favorite until Northern Iowa happened. Northern Iowa collapse was – that was statistically the worst collapse of all time.
I took the dog for a walk. I thought it was over. I came back and it was in overtime, and I like didn't understand what happened. I thought I had no clue how that possibly could have happened.
That was also one of those situations where I had money on Northern Iowa. I did okay this week. Like I lost money, but it wasn't catastrophic. So it feels like a win.
That's a win.
But I had money on Northern Iowa +7, and the sick part of me was like, if they lose this in overtime, if they lose the cover in overtime, that's a story for the ages. Up 12 with 44 seconds left and you lose +7, that would have been like all time. So I'm happy I got the money, but at the same time, that memory or that story would have been better than any story ever.
You know what? Well, it made no sense. Why didn't they press in the first overtime? A&M just stopped.
Texas A&M? Yeah. You would think the craziest part about that upset, and not to be stereotypical here, but you would expect a bunch of white dudes to be able to beat a press. Like that's what I would with like 6 quick crisp chest passes, you know? Yeah. That's how it's chest pass, and they're not going to beat it dribbling, but like they look like they had never seen a press in their life.
No, I disagree with that. That reminded me of me when I was in high school getting put in the game, and the crazy athletic black dudes would trap me in the corner and I would just shit my pants.
Right. Yeah. I agree with you there. Like I understand that aspect. I wouldn't expect you and I to beat the press one-on-one. I'm saying I expected their coach to like run like a weave play where they all kind of come at the ball at the same time. Then they all like are running down the sidelines and they're just passing it and they get a dunk. I feel like that's a Norman Dale play, you know? They're like practicing it without a basketball.
Racist.
Every single day after practice.
You can't get the pass out because once those athletic players get in desperation mode, they're just grabbing
everything. Well, and they also were passing the ball into the war. Like they basically were giving their teammates no chance. Like here, have the ball in the corner where you are getting trapped and you can't have any timeouts.
That's the main thing with college hoops too, is they go right to the trap spots every fucking time.
Yeah.
Even the guys who know how to break a press still don't really know how to break the press.
And you should not. You should never have to throw the ball into the corner when you can run the baseline. That was the most amazing part. When they were able to run the baseline and they still couldn't get the ball into any like part of the floor except the corner, I don't understand how that happened.
One more thing. Speaking of race, hearing the announcers talk about walk-up on Stephen F. Austin, like trying to use every adjective in the book without just saying he's white, that was one of my favorite parts. Like you wouldn't expect him to block that. Like when he walks in the gym, you don't think he's going to be very good. Like
That guy got screwed, man, because that if they win that game, then he has this entire week where it's a million stories about him, and they go and like they interview his fucking middle school coach in East Texas and all that bullshit. And now he gets nothing. He's not going to be an NBA player, I would assume. He's a 6'4 white dude who's not like point guards are 6'4 in the NBA. So, he got screwed. He would have been like a Kevin Pitsnoggle, like living legend, if he had got that extra weekend.
Also, upset of forever when a guy named Mekhi Mason puts up fucking like 30, and then you check and it's a white dude from Yale. Unbelievable. I liked Mekhi and Yale. I was on board with that. I feel like a lot of people hated them.
I was just sick of the jokes. I couldn't take the Duke Yale jokes anymore.
Yeah, like, there was a lot of that.
That was one of those situations where everyone had. Yeah.
If Mekhi Mason was on Duke, I'd hate his guts, and I was rooting as hard as I could for him on Yale. That's just the way it goes for me.
I hate Coach K, and I hate Grayson Allen, and I couldn't take the jokes. Like there was it was like newspaper columnists were making the Yale Duke. You know what I mean? They were hopping on Twitter for the first time in 3 months to throw out some like preppy white school jokes.
We'll get into some newspaper columnists trying to interact on the internet. But first, the Hulkster. We have not talked about Hulk Hogan and his massive victory over Gawker on the Rundown yet. He got $115 million awarded to him, and I think they might be tacking on more today in punitive damages. Huge win for Hulkamania. Dan, what do you got?
All right, so my legal mind has not read all the follow-up and see how much money Hulk is actually going to get. I know that Gawker is appealing. I just think it's so funny that, like everything that happens on the internet, the minute this hits, like, you know, Twitter, everyone immediately says, yeah, Gawker's, like, scummy for this, but there's a lot of people who do really good things. And it's like, and then when Dave writes one joke 6 years ago, the rest of us are forever tied to that one joke that he wrote 6 years ago, and we can never get rid of it. So I just love the hypocrisy on Twitter and all these like PC clicks saying, oh yeah, but they do great journalism and there's some great people there. And yeah, Nick Denton did one bad thing. Fuck out of here, dude. Come on. Get out of here.
Okay, Margo, you were all over it. You were murdering him on Twitter when the news broke. Your thoughts on the Hulkster?
No, I only tweeted one thing, and I did that. Trust me, I was like unhealthily happy when this happened, but I only tweeted one thing. I only did the Michael Jordan face because I could see something like this happening to us at some point in the future, and I don't want that to be used against me. But yes, in my conversations with you guys, I was happy about it. It's no secret that what
your direct quote was like. The greatest, like the only thing that's bringing me happiness right now is reading the comments on every tweet that Gawker Deadspin tweets out.
Yeah, so I read all the Gawker articles like hate reading. But if you see they tweet a story about, you know, what Orca, the SeaWorld thing, and every 30 replies are just Hulk Hogan leg drops and like.
every time Deadspin's tweeting, they're like, are you guys still in business?
What? Yeah, like, I thought you were dead.
Not out of business. The Hulk thing was incredible, specifically because of the way they were so defiant about not taking it down. And they were so like, this is our – they were going to die on this hill, and they died because of it. So it's weird how it all broke right after the Aaron Andrews thing too, because I feel like people were more inclined to just be like, fuck yeah, Hulk Hogan, whereas Aaron Andrews people were like
– Gawker – yeah, I mean the difference is Gawker – like you said, they put it up on their site and they're like, we're not taking this down.
Right.
Like,
so they were defiant.
It wasn't a peephole, like random thing where a mysterious guy out there, Gawker was like, no. We want everyone to know, like, this is what Hulk Hogan looks like naked and having sex. And we're staying here and we're not doing anything like against it.
Yeah. When Hulk dropped that tweet too, I told you I was going to take down another giant. Mic drop. I'm out of here. You're right. They'll appeal. You wonder how much they get, but Gawker has the money to pay out big bucks, so it's not going to be cheap.
I don't know if they have this much money, though.
No, like, but I mean, like, you know, the peephole dude literally had no money. Gawker, if it gets knocked down to, like, $20 million, they can probably pay a lot of that.
Did you see what they're tweeting now? I just tweeted it out before we came on. But they're, like, doing a summary, and they're talking about Delario. There's, like, four tweets about how Delario is broke. He has no revenue. All he owes is student loans. And they're like, you know, don't go after Delario too hard because he has literally no money to pay it. And he's just getting emasculated in this whole Twitter feed.
He's got student loans. Isn't he like 40?
Yeah. They said all that he has is $27,000 in student loans, so don't sue him for too much.
Him squirming on the stand when they were asking about joking about child porn was like, oh, man, I want to crawl into a hole and die, and I can't imagine what he feels like.
That was such a classic moment, too, where you know exactly the joke he was making, and, like, it's a sarcastic joke. He was basically treating getting deposed like being on the rundown.
Yeah,
like, what do you do? It felt like the Michael Scott.
They asked the question. He was like, "How do I answer this right now?"
It felt like the Michael Scott. He was like, "Yeah, you can read that back to me." It's like, dude, you just like fucked yourself 2 seconds ago. You really want him to read it back and like refuck yourself?
In the middle of all your March Madness coverage, Keith, you have to also juggle the spring break coverage. You do that well every year. This year we got spring break meathead who throws a direct hit to a fucking police car like 30 yards away. He tweets out the video, and the police department then tweeted at him saying, "We found you. We know your name. There's a warrant out for your arrest." This is spring break in 2016. This is how it goes. What do you got?
Yeah, I love the police response. I mean, first of all, that kid had a laser arm. He drilled the car from like 60 yards out. I can appreciate the cops tweeting it back at him, like playing the game that way. I will say, I talked about this with the Trump video. Like, I don't really care that he threw the ball. I hate when people upload themselves on the internet doing something blatantly illegal, knowing like how the internet works and how Twitter works, and then being surprised when they get a fucking arrest warrant sent right back to them.
Dan,
that's just like college kids though. And I thank God every day that Twitter wasn't really around when we were in college, because college kids will tweet me stuff all the time, and I'll know. I'd be like, you probably didn't want to put this on the internet, but I'll know in the moment that was like the greatest moment of their life. You know what I mean? Because when everyone remembers being 21 and like pegging a cop car with a football and it being like legendary, and then you kind of move away from college and you're like, oh yeah, dude, like that's illegal. So
here's my thing though. This is like when you get caught on a red light with like the camera instead of them actually catching you. If the cop doesn't catch you there, I feel like you should get away with it. You can't tweet me a fucking arrest warrant, okay, bro? You got to see me and catch me in the act. Who knows if that's even that guy? You face swap and Photoshop and shit all day long now.
Oh, you're a truther. You're a football truther.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
That wasn't me. Yeah, that's
sticking. That charge is not sticking. Mark my words. The Washington Post is out there. The dinosaurs trying to be young. Mixing it up in the internet, and they are now on the 10th anniversary of Twitter. They are declaring the MJ crying face meme dead and pleading with all of Twitter to stop using that meme. It's just as out of touch as it gets. Dan, you blog this. What do you got?
You can't stop it. I think we can all sit here and agree that it's ridiculous at this point, and it's so overdone. And every time someone loses, like the fact that the crying Jordan meme pops up within seconds is lunacy. But I've learned a long time ago that you can't stop this. You can't stop this. You can't even pretend to stop it. It's going to last. Do you guys think it's ever going to stop?
No.
I don't either. I think it's the rare thing that I don't think you can ever stop it.
I think at this point we are into like – like I saw some nerdy white people that I follow doing it. Like it's, you know, it went from like black Twitter and then it went to us who are people who are like kind of like just in the know. And now like really normal white people are using it.
That's the only way it gets stopped is like if
Kelly
Ripa and yeah.
Don't want to use it anymore because they made it lame. Right. So it might dip, but I think here's what I appreciate. The clever ones. When you just take like Bill Murray's head and put the face on it, like whatever. But like the Cincinnati one where the dunk was like a split second too late, when they made the ball Michael Jordan's face, I like that. That right. I was kick at it. The bracket, K-Margo, that you posted where every fucking win or loss was the MJ face. When you give a little thought, then it gets funny.
I don't know if you guys saw when Temple lost at the buzzer, I asked people to tweet me Bill Cosby on Jordan's face or Jordan's body. That was great. Like the stupid Bill Cosby faces on like a young athletic Jordan dunking. Like you do that little shit. I agree. You gotta like evolve it. But I do think that once the really lame white people get a hold of it, you're right. It might dip a little from that.
Keith, can the MJ crying face be stopped?
I nobody hates like overdone internet stuff more than me. Maybe Dan. Dan and I are the same in this regard, but like once something gets a little steam, we automatically hate it. This I still find funny. I have no idea why. I find it funnier every day, I think. It makes no sense. The March Madness, like after I posted that bracket, I was like, okay, I'm going to cool it on Michael Jordan face. And then four games after that, there was just hilarious one. Walk up, when somebody put walk up with the beard and the headband.
The Coach Cal one? Coach Cal was like a white black face with the hair. It was perfect. When you do it really good, it's still very funny. So and also people were like, this never was funny. I don't get it.
That's bullshit.
Like wet blanket, dump in your pants. Like you shouldn't be on the internet if you can't appreciate just laughing at shit like that.
Right. That actually makes you upset when you see crying Jordan. Now that I've thought this through, I think the only way it stops is if like Hillary Clinton starts doing it. That's probably it.
The way the campaigns are going, yeah. That could absolutely be.
But
the
that's
case.
Probably it. That's she's like the only person that I can think of where every move she makes is so contrived and cringeworthy. Where you'd be like, nope, it's done.
It would be a hell of a way to end it though if this was like she actually won and she put Trump's face on. It would be like period stop. It's over. But this is the greatest one of all time.
I was gonna she did a debate and like afterwards if she crushed Bernie Sanders and then tweeted out Bernie's old ass like Michael Jordan face. That'd be fucking funny.
Or the reverse would be good there too, the Dan Katz where you put Bernie on MJ. That's it for the rundown. We're into the after show now where we have to talk about what is just quite simply the greatest midlife crisis the world has ever seen. We're reaching new depths every single day. We just plow into new uncharted territory with Dave Portnoy and his midlife crisis. He's out at South by Southwest with the one and only, my arch nemesis, Tico Texas. He's big tech spending that oil rig money. I don't know if you guys kept up with everything over the weekend. The periscope of Dave walking around Tico Texas's mansion with her crying in the bedroom because he paid for all the liquor and didn't give her the money directly was everything. It was my entire thoughts on this whole saga in one nutshell. Like Dave being the midlife crisis weirdo paying for all these kids' booze to party at South by Southwest while like Young Metro's blasted in the background. With Tico Texas, that broke ass bitch hood rat crying that she didn't get like her like appearance fee or something from Dave. It all came to a perfect head for me. It was the epitome of Portnoy and Tico Texas. I don't know even what else you could say about it. Keith, you've been with Dave as long as I have. I mean, this has got to be rock bottom for him, right?
He's 38, right? I mean,
he's going to be 39, I think, this week.
Any minute,
Following Renee, his wife on Twitter, is the funniest part. Where she's responding to these things like, what the fuck? Like, what are you doing? And then he's like tweeting out Michaela Maroney bikini pictures. And
that one was creepy because the caption was little lady. It was like, dude, whoa, chill out.
Little lady is the creepiest thing ever. So oh, my God.
I it's going to be a hilarious video.
For sure.
I'm not going to deny that. The idea is so funny. Seeing his tweets were hilarious. I was laughing out loud. But the fact that Dave is the guy who, like, you shoulder tap in high school is so funny to think about. Like, hey, man, can you buy us some booze?
Yeah.
And he clearly is, like, the sugar daddy where he doesn't realize that Tico's just using him for his money. That hasn't really, like, set in. He thinks that, like, they're friends and they're cool.
You know what? I know what you're saying. Tico's so fucking stupid and so weird that I think on some level, like, they actually have this weird little bond. But you're right. I mean, Porno doesn't realize that whole house was like, I don't know who this weird white guy in a cowboy hat is, but he's buying us vodka. So, like, we're just going to let him hang out. He doesn't get that yet.
I also like that he just totally jacked Hank's move of changing the Twitter name to where you are at that moment. And he'll never admit it, but it's just funny to me that he is now at the point because, like, he killed Basic Hank on Snapchat, but now he's at the point where he's just stealing Hank's stuff, and he'll never admit that. He'll be like, "Oh, I own Hank's brain, so it's mine." But that made me laugh as well.
I think Dan, I think you said something like this, but people that thought we were going to change when Chernin bought us, Dave.
Dave's a drug dealer now. Dave's a drug dealer.
Dave goes and smokes weed with a bunch of fighting rappers in the background.
Yeah, no, he's like, if I understood that periscope, Dave is like the money like he's basically a middleman between a drug dealer and a drug fiend. Tico, by the way, who the fuck is addicted to weed? She was making it seem like she needed weed to survive. Those people are the weirdest.
She needs to take some of that money from Dave and go to the dentist because those teeth are getting gross. And don't think, Tico, I didn't notice your little fucking belly thing that covered up your belly button. We know what's going on there. You can't have that anymore.
Her music is so bad, too. It's like
so bad. It's so, so bad. It's unbelievably bad.
Who keeps telling her that she should keep going with this? Well, like, if you're a really bad vlogger, someone should be like, hey, man, you suck at this. Stop doing it. How has no one said that to Tico Texas? Like, hey, this is really bad music. Like, no one's going to buy this. Please stop.
As long as she's got Big Tex and that oil rig money backing her, I'm sure the crew will just keep yessing her to death so they get fucking parties like that. So the funniest thing I saw on Twitter was the guy who tweeted that Dave in his cowboy shirt, jeans, boots, and hat looked like his mini horse. Which is so true. If you do it side by side, Dave has turned into his own mini horse with his like fat. It is an unbelievable comparison.
Oh,
but, I mean that's our fearless leader at this point. I want someone to sit down, Lorne Michaels, who Dave constantly compares himself to, and just say, take a look at this video, man. This guy's parading around the internet saying he's the next you, because I don't think Lorne Michaels was ever playing fucking cowboy dress up Halloween when SNL was at their peak. I don't know though. Maybe I'm wrong.
That video of him dancing with those guys and just being the whitest guy in the history of white guys was so fucking funny.
You're right. It's gonna be hilarious, man. That is gonna be a must watch video for sure.
I hope they got everything, because I need to see everything. I need to see all of it.
Yeah, like I want an unedited version where it's like 100 minutes long.
Yeah, no, I'd watch like the two. You remember like Braveheart when you were a kid was two VCR tapes? Yeah. I'll watch both of those for Dave Portnoy goes and hangs out with Tico Texas crew all day on a Sunday afternoon. And like during the tournament, which is
I know
just that blows my mind even more.
I didn't know he was doing this. Like I didn't know that he was there. I went out for a little bit and I missed something that happened and didn't tweet. And I was like, oh shit, I hope Dave doesn't yell at me. And then I checked Twitter and there's a picture of him getting his hair braided while he's smoking weed in like a crack den.
When your boss is a drug dealer, we're cool now. Like we can do anything. We don't have to show up to work anymore. Our boss is a drug dealer.
All right, that's the rundown. I don't know what Portnoy might never come back. He might just be like Tico life for good now.
I like how we don't know. No one knows either. Like, this is a little bit of a behind-the-scenes look. When people think that we're, you know, we get the rundown all scheduled out and all this shit, we literally don't even – John will text me all the time. Fights will text me all the time and be like, hey, do you know if Dave's around this week? I'd be like, I don't know.
Nobody knows.
No one knows. He doesn't tell anyone when he's here, when he's not. We just like, all right, next day he's going to pop up. He's going to be at spring break next. He's going to spring break with Kat.
Right.
So he's going to be at like Senior Frogs taking tequila shots off little ladies. Midlife crisis is going to keep going.
I didn't think it could get any deeper, but him at spring break will absolutely be worse. It'll be so much worse. Dave will be with chicks who are like probably like 17 and a half partying with them this week. Holy shit. On the lookout for that. That's the rundown.